today's web anyway is pretty much based on three different technologies. HTML, which is pretty much the first web technology that was invented in the early 90s, and that pretty much is what they call a semantic layer, or it tells you what the document or the web page essentially is. So in other words, paragraphs, lists, forms, form fields, such like that. So the semantic structure of the document. And that's probably the most important layer for accessibility, because if that's wrong or missing, and in fact we'll see that in one of the sites today, the kayak.com site is missing a lot of semantic markup. The second layer is the presentation layer, and that's a sort of visual wow layer. That's where you specify different colors and fonts and all that kind of stuff, and that's CSS, or they also call it style sheets. And then the third layer is the behavioral layer, and that's where you can add or change the behavior of various elements in HTML, so that's essentially JavaScript. That's the three technologies that the current web is based on. The most important one for this discussion is going to be HTML, so I'll just talk about the sites for a second. I'm actually going to compare kayak.com, which I found to be awful, to another site that I sort of stumbled on through kayak.com, which is Priceline, which does pretty much the same thing, and it's a whole lot easier to use from a screen reader perspective, and I'll try to explain why. So I'm going to use Firefox.
Mozilla Firefox. Start page, okay, graphic edit.
So we're going to go to kayak.com first.
Now you're using Firefox as opposed to IE?
Great.
Yeah, it kept crashing in IE, so I decided not to use it.
Kayak-cheap flights, hotels, airline tickets, cheap.
So there's essentially two aspects to this. There's the input side where you enter your information, and then there's the output side where you actually get the information that you want, hopefully. And the input side isn't too bad. There's not too many fields here. It's easy to skip. There's what's called a landmark on this page, so you can now specify different parts of the page to be different semantic. You can basically say everything in this container is all to do with search, and you can give it a what they call a landmark role of search. And you can say everything inside here is main content, like the main article or whatever, and give it a landmark of main. And you can go through these landmarks with JAWS with the semicolon or shift semicolon key. So it's just kind of like another heading kind of concept, but the great thing about it for us is that they're completely invisible. So hopefully it will get people to add more of them. So these guys have actually
graphic images slash drop down dash arrow wrap in the top graphic images slash
added one here, but it's
main region start.
It is, for some reason JAWS doesn't actually land on it when you move to it. It goes just before it. So
wrap main region start.
So it says main region start, which is basically the main content, and
radio button check around dash trip 1 of 3.
And here is where you can specify
radio button not check 1-way 2 radio button not check multi dash city 3.
What kind of trip
radio
you want.
Button,
so
check 1-way.
Just do one way for the
one
hell
that way radio button checked. Radio button from edit pose.
And we're going to
land. Add nearby airports to link airport map to edit.
And we're going to say Miami.
Virtual PC link. Land. Add nearby airports checkbox link airport map. Link my dates are depart. Link my dates are flexes depart. Edit 06/23/2012. Sat jump 23 anytime. Combo box anytime. One adult. Combo box one adult. Link children or seniors. Economy.
No.
Link children or seniors. Economy.
Now, there's a lot of
combo
noise
boxing
here. There's a lot of extra links that don't seem to
combo boxing
have any text in them. And this is part of why this site is so terrible. Because I think there's extra features here that
link
we're not seeing because they're not labeled correctly.
Combo box economy. Link. Land. Non-stops only. Checkbox not checked. Link. Land. Find hotels. Checkbox not linked.
And so
land. Car rentals. Find flights.
I'm
button. Main
still
region
wondering
end.
If I had
link
missed my to field.
Vertical
because,
bar. Link privacy.
I think I did. So we have to
graphic images slash drop down that drop add nearby air my dick the combo box
so
economy find car rentals checkbox wrap in the top wrap in the top find car rentals checkbox
link find
link combo box link combo box one combo anytime sat edit 06 left kayak virtual find check link land link find car rentals checkbox notch find flights button
there you go.
Jeez.
Dialogue, page has 2 frames, 1.
That was only slightly painful. But when you get the results back.
Graphic images slash drop down dash arrow.
Again, you can go to the main content of
the
page with semicolon again, and it doesn't land you in the right place, so you have to
main region start.
So you go down one line and it says main region start. But the problem here is that there's no structure to it. Semantically, everything is just flat. There's no lists, there's no tables. You can't really tell when one item starts and one item ends. There's no item grouping.
Radio button not checked around dash trip. Radio
so at first it duplicates
link
a lot of the stuff you
edit, please.
You entered here.
Please
and
enter
then
a new airport. Kayak search results. Main region start. Edit
okay,
Boston.
So,
edit Miami. Edit 06. Edit 06 slash 30 slash 20.
So it's repeating.
Edit 06 slash 23 slash 20. Edit 06.
So it's repeating the dates and everything that
find
I
find flights button.
That I put in.
Find flights button.
Now after the find flights button.
208 of. Link 1684 flights.
So there's a lot of flights.
Link price alert. link fare charts, link airline fees, link app package.
And I don't know what all these things do, but stops. I guess they're somewhat...
Link $438, stops,
now,
link app package.
Now I guess we're into stops. The actual data area here where it's telling you what it found for you, but...
Stops.
So the first thing we get is stops. Now I have no idea what that means. Stops, what does that mean?
Link $438.
Stops $413, so there's a price.
Link.
So I assume link we're dollar. Into the data for one of these flights here.
Link.
But then there's a link that has nothing, no text or anything associated with it. Maybe there's an image or something that's not, that has no label.
Land, nonstop checkbox checked.
So now I get a checkbox that says nonstop. Now what does that mean?
Link $312.
So now, and now I'm getting another
link $312
price.
Link, land, one stop checkbox checked, times.
So I'm assuming that
one stop checkbox checked.
That it's giving me the lowest nonstop and
link.
One-stop flight? I don't
land.
Know. There's no way of knowing.
One-stop checkbox times. Link, land, take-off checkbox checked. Link.
Take-off? I don't know. I mean, I think these are various filters and all that stuff that you can set. But
link number. Land.
I mean,
link
all these set things that say link number, that's just bad markup.
Airports, link reset.
So,
$312. Austin, depart slash return. Same airports, checkbox not checked.
You know, Rich, those checkboxes, I think, because I used the kayak thing for years, and it's gotten really much more difficult. But all those checkboxes, I think, are filters so that you can just do nonstop check just for nonstops, or when it says stops, you can have nonstop one stop, two stops even. And so those are the filters. And then further down that page, I think, is the content of the flights. It'll give you maybe 10 or 15 flights per page or something like that. And that's where I had a lot of difficulty, is just even finding the flights and the cost and that sort of thing.
Right, because the data is all mixed up. There's no way of telling where one item ends and the next item begins, and it's because they don't use correct markup. They don't use containers like lists or anything like that. They don't have headings. They don't have any way of telling you where the things start and end. So it's just like, okay, does this price go with the one that I just read before it, or does it go with the one after it? Or?
Link. Land. Phone colon located in Providence. Dot dot dot. Checkbox checked. Dollar link. Land. Dot link. Land. Dot dot link.
Yeah.
Land. PVD colon Providence dash TFGR. Dot dot dot. Checkbox not checked. Miami. Dollar link. Land.
I mean,
FLL colon Fort Lauderdale. Checkbox not checked. Dollar link. Land.
I mean,
now
it's giving me a bunch of cities.
Link.
Why is it giving
those
me a bunch?
Land.
Yeah,
PBI
those are. Yeah, that.
Link. Dollar link. Land.
Those are nearby airports.
Link. Dollar tender. Link. Link. Dollar 12. Link. Land. First checkbox checked. Link. Dollar 712. Link. Land, mixed checkbox check, airlines, select link, link, land, aircraft checkbox, link, link, land.
So, of course, there's no way of skipping this either except arrow.
Link, link, land,
so
you, Delta checkbox check. Link, $3, link, link, $329.
So,
Delta, link, link,
so now
link,
I'm getting
three,
this
Delta
thing that says
check,
Delta,
Delta
which, I, which I assume that's one of the airlines, and you can check it or not.
Link, $329.
But now it's giving me a price.
Link.
An empty link?
Land. JetBlue Airways checkbox checked.
Oh, I see.
Link $329.
So are those the lowest prices? I imagine that they're the lowest prices,
link.
But who knows?
Land.
You know,
Spirit Airlines checkbox checked.
A price.
Link, link, land. Link, link, land. U.S. Airways checkbox. Link, link, land. Mode link at in Southwest.
But I'm still not seeing like a table of data or any kind of data here that's listing all the flights it found.
Whistle with colon slash slash zero.
So now I'm getting an ad.
Flash, flash on, flash end. Graphic left fair and I right fair. Whistle with frame, H frame end. Land. Matrix checkbox not checked. Plus slash dash sort radio button not checked radio sort
so,
radio button not checked price star.
So you can sort by price, which doesn't seem to do a whole
radio
lot.
Radio button not checked airline. Radio
well,
button
it's
not checked
it's
price
not checked.
Star.
Well, I know, but
sort.
Even
radio
if it
button
is,
not checked.
But I'll check it.
KX search results dash Mozilla Firefox.
Wait while it does its thing.
KX searchers link KX dash travel deal.
Now
dash
we have to
KX search.
Find that
main
button
landmark
again.
Region.
So
price.
Use the R for radio button.
Airline radio
button.
Takeoff radio. Duration radio. Wrap in the top. Price star radio. Button. Wrap in the top. Wrap in the top.
Price
star radio. 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 Link Miami flights. Double best. Link dash. Link that. Link that. Link
that.
Link
that. Link that. Link
that. Link that. Link that. Link duration radio button not checked. Landing rate takeoff radio button radio rate add link double best link Las Vegas flights dash link dash link Chicago dash link Denver flights link dot graphic air slash UA United Bose 854 Bose 854
854
MIA 343P 6H49N
right.
One stop left fairing you were right fairing MIA 830 MIA 830 Bose 147P.
So now I thought I asked for one ways, but maybe these are round trips. Who knows? I don't know.
One stop left 5H17N. One stop left fair and I right fair. Economy. Link select. Link United $22.68. Colgan Air DPA.
So now it's saying, $22.68. Okay, is that the lowest price? No. But there's no way of sorting the other way. You just say sort by price, and then somehow you have to get to the end of the data to find the lowest one or something. It's just ridiculous. I don't understand this. So now there's this other thing I found called Priceline, and it does it much better. It's not perfect by any means, but you'll see the difference. Navigate. And it's because they use more structure in their HTML.
Priceline.com vertical bar best deal on both.
Finding hotels in New York.
Page has one brick. Link skip navigate. City or airport edit.
So.
City or airport edit.
Boston. So.
Check dash and edit. /DD/EI.
Oh, now this is good. It actually shows you the date format.
Right.
It's nice.
When you first go into the page, is it nicely laid out in terms of headings? Can you quickly get an idea of how the page is structured?
Priceline. Shop for discount travel heading. Search over 165,000 hotels heading level 3.
These are the headings.
Your own price register. Dash back by our big cool tools that help you find deals heading level 3. Save on last minute deals heading level 2. List travel deals for you heading level 2. Wrap in the top.
They actually have quite a few headings, but of course there's no heading before the actual input form.
There are no landmarks.
So to get to the first field, you can just do F for form field and
city or airport edit. Awesome.
You'll land right on the airport field. There are some pricing, navigation
links, vacation packages, link groups, list end, blank, heading level 1 shop for discount travel. Link new to list of five, link fly, link hotel, link list end, link traffic for deep blank, heading level 3 search over 165,000 hotels, city or airport, check dash in, edit,
so
city or airport.
That's actually the heading you want.
Heading level,
it's search over one,
heading level 3 search over 165,000 hotels.
So that, if you, right after that is the beginning of the form.
City or airport, edit,
which
Boston.
Is kind of odd, but that's whatever.
Check dash in.
And
edit 06/30mm/dd/i, check dash in, edit 06/30mm/dd/i.
Oops. Now, the problem with this is that they actually seem to have put the date format in the field itself. That's kind of
why
a pain in the butt.
Zero.
Because
selected.
As I just did here, I entered a date, and I didn't realize that the date format itself was in the field, so I'm getting my characters mixed up with their date format. And
check dash out, edit.
And actually,
virtual piece, check dash out, edit.
I don't know why it's...
Link graphic, check dash out, date calendar icon. Rooms. Combo box one room.
Oh, so this looks like hotel. This actually looks like hotels.
Yeah, you're in hotels.
Yes, and yet it said airport
right,
when you started.
Heading level 2, link name, your own price register.
That's really
Priceline.
Confusing.
Priceline.com, city or airport, edit, Boston.
City or airport.
City or airport, heading level 3,
search
over 160. Land, link graphics
for deep maybe this wasn't doing what I thought it was doing,
link
but...
Link vacay, link cars, link hotel.
You know, I think you might have
price,
to...
Link graphic, link sign in, link micro, link my link check your link graphic feedback, link help, list of 10 items, link flights.
I think you actually have to click flights.
Yeah, okay. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Flights link. Find cheap flight tickets and search cheap flights vertical bar.
All right, there we go. I think that's...
Find cheap
flights. I just found this last
link
night, so...
Navigation. Search flights heading level 1.
There we go. Now there's an H1 for search flights, if so...
List of 4 items. Link round dash link 1 dash link multi dash destination radio button check flight only 1 of 3. Radio button not checked. Radio button checked. Flight only 1 of 3.
And now there's all
radio
these buttons
button.
And flight
radio
only is checked for you.
From left fare city or airport right fare.
There we go.
Rick from left fare city edit. From edit.
Boston.
To edit.
There we go.
Departing edit. /DD/EI.
If you
why departing edit.
If you press backspace as soon as you get into a field, I think the contents will go away. So
returning edit.
June 30th. So we say. So we'll put 8/30/2012.
Departure time combo box.
Actually,
anytime.
No. I actually really want
virtual PC.
It'd be nice if I just only had a one way, so there's less data to sort through.
Return time combo box anytime. Departure time at any time. Passive left combo left fare combo box 0 children. Search flights button. Graphic search flights plus hotels clickable. Link graphic no book and please
that.
Find cheap. Flight only radio button check. 1 of 3 radio button not checked. Rate from left fare city or airport right fare. Radio button list end.
I thought there was a
link
one.
Link name your own price register. Link multi dash destination. Link
oh,
one dash
go.
Way.
Here we go. One way.
One dash way link.
That's what I want. They tend to be cheaper, and they're much easier to sort through the results.
Find cheap flight tickets and search virtual fee from edit.
So for this demonstration.
To edit.
From edit. I'll try it. Awesome.
Best days to fly full of cheap flight tickets. Virtual PC. Find cheap flight from edit. From edit. To edit. What? Departing edit. /DD/EI. Why? Departing edit.
/6/land.
Well, 1 dash way departure time combo box anytime.
Anytime.
Left fare 18 plus meters right fare and combo. Okay. Left fare 2-17 meters right virtual PC
so
cursor.
You...
Left fare combo box 0 children. Search flights now button.
There we go. So the form is
search
pretty short once
button.
You actually find
Priceline.
It.
Priceline.com-travel airline ticket. Priceline.com-travel airline ticket. Link traffic negotiating. Please wait. Priceline.com-travel airline tickets. Cheap flights. Hotels. Priceline.com-travel.
So it takes a while.
Page has four frames, 11 headings, and 239 links.
There we go. So
one dash away flight from Boston. My left fair and right fair to Miami. FL left fair and MIA right fair and heading level one.
So that's the first heading on the page, which is pretty nice.
Dash, John 30, 2012, and dash for one adult. List of two items. Link change flight search.
And
link sign up for price
calculation. And it repeats the information.
Secure underline from secure underline.
Now
list of two items. Link flights to Miami from $258.60.
So
link traffic big deal. Link save up to 40%. Name your own price register. List ad summary colon itinerary matrix.
Now, this is nice. So
table
right
with four columns and two rows.
So the first table on the page,
Link American Airlines,
is
Link Delta Airlines.
Essentially,
Link Airlines.
The airlines laid out in columns.
Link Delta Air, Link US Airways.
And then under
Link
each one is the lowest price that it found.
Link American Airlines, $258.60. Bottom of column, $258.60. Link Delta Airlines, $200.
Now, they didn't quite code the table right, because when you move from cell to cell, it doesn't actually read the header. So you have to go up and find the header.
Link US Airways.
US Airways, down.
$320.60. $320.
So, Link United Airlines. So you can get a pretty good summary of what it found
table
here head. in this table. Then after this, you get
prices are inclusive of taxes and fees with the exception of package fees.
And you get some stuff, and then you get eventually get a list of
land heading level 3, filter your flight results.
Now you get the filters.
Choose from 47 itinerary. Filter your flight results heading level. List of 4 items. Traffic sorted by price. Link airline. Link departure time.
And it already sorts it for you by price.
List of $250. List of 40 items.
Okay, now you get
list of 40 items,
which is essentially
$258.601-way per person. Link traffic choose itinerary. List of two items nesting level one.
So now you have this nested list structure here, which tells you
list of 40 items,
$258.60. Essentially the price first, and then
link traffic choose itinerary.
And then we'll eventually tell you
list of two items,
the information for each flight.
Link
and you can probably walk the list with I, although I'm not sure that always works very well.
$319.801-way per person.
That seems to.
$319.801-waiver. $319.
And, you know, you can tell where the items end and begin and end. You have to
link package fees. Link view seat map. Link show flight details. Link back traffic. $319. Link traffic choose itinerary. List of one items nesting level one. Link track. $319.801-waiver person.
So the first thing in each flight is always the price.
Link traffic choose
itinerary. Then there's choose itinerary, and then there's a list of
list
stuff.
List of one items nesting level one. List of one items nesting level two. American Airlines flight 573.
Which actually gives
list end nesting level two. Departing Boston. My left parent. Link goes right parent. Sat John 30. Twins arriving Miami. FL left. Link MIA right parent. Sat John 30. Link traffic save this flight. Not dash stop total time 3H20N. List end nesting level 1. Link show flight details.
So when it says list end, that's pretty much the end of the data for that flight.
Link view seat map.
And now you're going to see these other
link package fees.
Other things.
Traffic best price guaranteed. Link traffic get started. Link save up to 40%.
And then there's some ads here or whatever. And now you're going to see, when you see the next price, followed by
link traffic choose itinerary.
Choose itinerary, you know you've gotten to the next flight. And it's just repeats that way until the end of the list. And there's even
browse 47 available flights colon heading level 4.
I think there's even
traffic previous. Link 1.
Where it says
browse
47
available flights.
Now, right after that, you get the pager. So you can go
traffic previous.
Previous.
Link 1. Vertical bar. Link two, vertical, link three.
These are how many pages of results
link
you have.
Next.
So it's very nice. And that's pretty much it. And this is because they've managed to add some semantic information to the HTML that allows you to know where you are. Sighted people can see the format. They can see things in two dimensions. We have one long strip of stuff to go through. And if it's just flat with no structure, then there's no way we can really do it efficiently.
Do you think Priceline did this initially, or do you think Priceline got a lot of feedback from disabled customers saying, hey, can you improve this?
They actually have a thing at the bottom, which I stumbled on.
Click here to rate this page. Click your feedback.
What is that?
Screen reader users, colon, please switch to forms mode for this link.
So they actually have something at the bottom. This is something about screen reader users. So
link
and if you, now,
screen reader users.
If you click that, it doesn't actually appear to be clickable, but if you click that, you'll get to a feedback page. It looks like either somebody already gave them feedback or gave them hell or something.
I vaguely remember some type of DOJ action with Priceline.
Right, I wouldn't doubt it. So yeah, they've done sort of the minimum amount of stuff, and you know, it could be a lot better, but as we've seen today, it could be a whole lot worse.
Airline and travel sites seem to be some of those different.
Because they know everybody goes there. They know people with money go there because obviously you need money to fly. And so they show you all these ads and stuff that tend to clutter the screen. A lot of times they slow the screen reader down because they're flash or some other animation that moves or does whatever. So the screen reader has a tough time. So if you go to Travelocity, Velocity or Expedia. It's just horribly slow, and it's just impossible to get anything done. This one actually seems pretty spiffy. You know, it doesn't slow you down too much. There's ways of moving through it. When you get a results page, for example, if you just go to the top of the page and hit T,
table with four columns and two rows,
you'll get right to that initial matrix that tells you, you know, the four or five cheapest flights that it found and the airlines that corresponding. There's no real easy way to get to the top of the actual lists.
List of four items. List of 40 items.
But if you hit the L key, it'll move you eventually to a list that has a lot of items in it, and you can assume that that's the actual flight data.
So, because I used it like the Kayak, and he says those price lines seems much nicer. But for anybody who's interested, you know, it's really difficult to actually book using these sites, using a screen reader. But if you can get the information, it gives you the lowest price and the airline, then you can call them up. But you know who to call. And you know which airlines, like it's JetBlue or AirTran or whatever, have basically the lowest flights to that area. And then when you call them up, you can get all the different flight options and prices from them. This helps you really pare down your search really quickly. At least that's how I do it. Could you explain what Flash is when we run into Flash on these pages?
Flash is essentially a technology invented in the 90s by Adobe, and it was originally for adding sort of animated cartoony things to the web because they needed something that was a little more flashy than bare text on a bare background. And this is before they really had JavaScript that did a lot, and so Flash was an easy way for them to spiff up sites basically with animation. Now you can do a lot of that animation in HTML and JavaScript, but the problem with Flash is that it was never made accessible from the outset. So when it first came on the scene, you couldn't use it at all, and then most notably JAWS and now NVDA have given you some access to Flash, but only if the authors do a lot of work to make it accessible, and even then it's not fun to use and not very intuitive and whatever. I mean, it's not an open technology, so you need an extremely expensive development kit to even author Flash, and of course that development kit is not accessible. I don't even know much about it because I can't use it. Basically what I do is if I need some Flash on a site, I'll try it in Firefox. Generally it won't work, or you'll get maybe one button that's sort of somewhat accessible. And what it tends to be used for now mostly is wrapping videos, because it's a sort of a somewhat easy way of making them somewhat copy protected. So it's difficult for people to grab them because they're wrapped in this Flash layer. You know, you get a lot of control over the way the video looks and everything like that. So now with HTML5 having its own video element, it's a lot easier to make videos more accessible and easier to code them. And so I think a lot more authors will hopefully be using them in less Flash in the future. You know, for me, I just try it in Firefox. If it doesn't work, then generally I'll go to Internet Explorer, and Internet Explorer tends to be a little bit better with Flash, with JAWS anyway.
Do you use any particular approach when you're going to a new website?
Look for headings first, and then landmarks. And then if you know that you're actually there to fill out a form, then maybe I'll start with the F key to, you know, move to the next form field. You know, but that's pretty much the three main ways of moving through the page that are fairly efficient. And if none of those things work, then you're kind of on your own with lots of arrow keys. I would say tabbing would be the last resort, because you don't really know where you're going to end up, because a lot of people will change the tab order from the order that it should be to something else because it's visually more more appealing, or it would get you where they think you want to go more quickly, but oftentimes it doesn't, or it's not intuitive. So I would pretty much say headings first, then landmarks, and then form fields, although if you're actually there to fill out a form, then I would try the form field first and see if you get where you should be.
The other thing that I find useful is using the N as in Nancy command, because if nothing else, that will get you to a fairly large text field. And a lot of pages, in my experience, don't use headings, don't use anything like they should, or they'll just miscode it so badly that you still don't know. I mean, I've even seen places that have skip to main content, and you hit that link and you end up somewhere stupid that isn't even anywhere close to them, and you still don't know where you are.
What does N mean? Or
in JAWS,
that's a JAWS command.
It's a JAWS
command.
Many
of the others, I haven't heard N before.
N gets you to the first large field of text.
All right, block of text that's not links.
The default, I believe, is 25 characters, but you can set it for different sizes depending on what you want to do.
It's good to find an article sometimes where there's lots of links, but you know that there's an article somewhere on that page, and it'll bring you to the block of text to find the article.
How useful is the links list?
It's the same as tabbing, essentially, almost. If you know that there's a link there that you need to find, it's nice because you can hit the first letter of the link text and it will take you there fairly quickly. If it's a new site where you have no idea what's on it, that's probably the worst way of navigating.
I noticed that there are options within the browser where you can view source, or is that at all helpful for somebody who doesn't know HTML? Like if there are a lot of unlabeled links, for example, I mean, other than just clicking on it and seeing what it does, are there other things that people can do to reveal some of that information?
That's what I do is I end up looking at the source. And if you don't know HTML, it's probably not going to be very helpful.
Not gonna be
helpful. I mean, it's not just HTML anymore. That's the other problem. It's CSS now also that you have to kind of count in.
And JavaScript.
CSS, as far as I understand it, you know, you can make things look nice. How does it affect accessibility?
Most styles are not communicated to the screen reader. Font changes. Yeah, you can find out what the font is if you ask it. It doesn't necessarily affect your experience. The only thing that really actually affects your experience and is you can either hide or show an element, and that essentially removes it from the screen and also removes it from the JAWS display or the screen reader display, so the virtual buffer, if you like. And they use that all the time. For example, if sometimes they'll do it in an FAQ or something like that, where if you click on a question, you know, all of a sudden the text of the answer will appear below the question. That's done with just changing an attribute in the style sheet that says, hey, unhide this thing. That's really the only effect you're going to see from CSS and, you know, via a screen reader, really.
And JavaScript?
JavaScript is actually adds behavior. You know, for example, by default, all anchor elements or A elements are clickable and they actually do something when you click them. But you can say, I want a paragraph to be clickable and I want it to do this when you click it. That's the kind of thing that you can do with JavaScript. That can be done correctly, and it can be done incorrectly.
If you're going to tell somebody, if you say to somebody, I want you to do certain things to make a website accessible, what's the best way to convey that to somebody that's actually working on the website? Because you can't just say...
You can't just turn on a switch and say, hey, I want the accessibility switch to be thrown on the site, because
exactly.
That's not meaningful. I don't know.
Can do certain things, like you can point people to accessible websites. One important thing for me is, for instance, the headings. They are easy to implement. Often there are things that look like headlines, but they're not HTML implemented, so they're not headings. So that is one easy thing that could be changed.
In all the years that I've been doing web stuff, of course, one thing that keeps coming up again and again is the World Wide Web Consortium guidelines.
They're now at version 2. It covers a lot more technologies because, you know, the web now encompasses CSS and JavaScript and, you know, probably other things as well. They're good. Because they're so general, they're really difficult to follow in a lot of ways. So, I mean, when I test sites, I don't actually go specifically by the guidelines. There's a content management system called Drupal, and a lot of people use that. In fact, my housemate is a web developer, and his shop uses that almost exclusively. You know, Drupal has designed their default templates to be as accessible as they can be. So if you use Drupal in a sort of default, out-of-the-box way, you'll get very accessible sites. They're not perfect, but they're a lot more accessible than they would be. There's another thing called WordPress, which is essentially a blogging package that has also done a similar thing, and the sites produced by WordPress are very accessible. You know, the people in the business that are actually doing these high-profile sites and things, they really should know about W3C and the guidelines, and they should know how to interpret them. And there are lots of supporting documents that the W3C has written on how to actually interpret these things and what they actually mean and all this. If you're curious, you can go there and look, and then it's just piles of stuff. They've actually done a lot to try to help people wade through all this stuff.
Hey, Rich, I've had the opportunity to test a few sites myself, mostly stuff that I was looking to get contracts with government entities. And the one thing I've always come across is that there will be the project coordinator, and he'll sit with me and he'll go through, you know, a site, and we'll go through it from not only accessibility but usability standards, the way it goes back. Then it goes back to the coder, and the coder only wants to talk about running it through a 508 checker. He doesn't want to talk about the usability aspect of it.
Right.
From a perspective of someone like you, like, what would you want to hear? We talk about what to say, you know, what's the language, you know, you could possibly use to...
What I've found to be most helpful, if you can do it, is to actually sit down with a developer and have him or her watch you use the site, because 90% of them have never seen anybody use a screen reader. All they're confronted with is this pile of documents that says what to do and what not to do, and guidelines that don't... Once they see you using this stuff, You know, this has happened to me again and again. I'll sit with somebody that has coded this site, and some of these sites are pretty complicated, and I'll sit here and show them what a screen reader is and how it actually displays the site and what my experience of the site is like, and within 10 minutes, they'll get it.
What I've come across is that, like I said, with the project coordinator here in Boston, and all of a sudden, you know, a couple of days later, he'll come back on his cell phone with me. I got the coda. He's in, you know, Anchorage.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I can't sit with him for 2 hours and right. show him how I'm using this.
Yeah.
I have referred people to the American Foundation for the Blind's web accessibility pages. I wonder if you've looked at those, because they seem simpler to me and more direct, because there really are a number of things that if a designer does them, they will do much toward accessibility of that website. And in a lot of cases, they just don't do them because they either don't care or they don't know.
That's true. I mean, I would say the biggest things are headings, landmarks, use of semantic structure, label your form fields, and label your images. If you did those five things,
yeah.
You know, but people have to know what that means. And I don't know what AFB's guidelines or whatever it looks like, but the one I always refer people to if I have to is WebAIM, webaim.org.
A lot of people who are vendors who sell products specifically to people who are blind don't follow these guidelines.
That's
too.
True.
And the 508 guidelines are just the worst. They're
yeah.
incredibly out of date. They really have no relevance anymore. There's been some talk of a refresh of the 508 stuff, but I don't think it's happened yet. I don't know when it's going to happen. If you can get people to code against the W3C stuff, it would be a lot better. You know, but again, guidelines are guidelines, and they don't really, if you really want to teach somebody how to do accessibility right.
Is there any high-level web content machine producer that works and that you can turn on and you can say to it, I want you to keep this stuff accessible, and it'll do it?
Not really. But again, it depends what you're doing. If you're actually creating a blog, then WordPress is the way to go, and I think it's even fairly accessible to actually start creating a blog. You know, if you know what you're doing, you can install WordPress on your own machine or your own server, but more likely you'd be going to WordPress.com and using their site to actually enter information and create the blog. And the blog will be accessible when it's done, and the process of creating it will be fairly accessible. Of course, it's only one type of site. There's a, you know, Drupal and probably other content management systems now will allow you to create those kind of sites. But again, if you want just a general website, Dreamweaver is, from what I understand, it's more or less out of fashion, but I just heard of this thing called Bootstrap or something like that that actually can build a database-driven website for you. I don't think it's a GUI thing. It's more like a set of templates and code snippets that you can use or that are all wrapped up for you. And so if you're a developer, you'll start with that and add stuff to it. I haven't actually looked at it yet, so I don't know how accessible the templates are to begin with.
It feels like sometimes I'm going backwards, that I had actually better access to the web a few years ago than I do now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's partially true. I mean, I see it as a race, and, you know, we're just playing catch up, and I don't see that changing anytime soon because, you know, the next technology that's going to come down at us is 3D stuff, and so then, you know, all the screen readers are going to have to figure out, what do we do with this? And then the W3C is going to have to get involved and say, well, what kind of guidelines can we levy on developers for this kind of stuff? And it's just always going to be a catch up game because no one is really saying from the start that accessibility needs to be thought of. I think it's always going to be difficult.
Bruce, do you have any experience with online testing sites for long distance education?
No.
Heard of a company called Criterion?
No.
They do that sort of thing, and they're not accessible.
I mean, that's pretty bad because obviously you're aiming that stuff at K-12, which really by law has to be accessible. And I mean, if you're not, if you're aiming at a university, I guess the legal requirements aren't as strict, but still, you'll be sued if you're producing stuff that's not accessible. I mean,
can you say a little bit just about legal requirements? I mean, who's required to be accessible?
From my understanding, it's, you know, K-12 stuff has to be accessible, and universities are, I think they're held to 504 guidelines, which are less stringent, and they don't say you have to be accessible, but basically people can challenge them and have successfully challenged them.
And what about commercial sites? Because, you know, you hear about lawsuits and this and that.
I don't think there's any legal requirement. I mean, there may be. There's precedents. I mean, there's the Target precedent and stuff like that. So you can, you know, if you can get up enough people and enough money to sue these people, and in fact, that's what the NFB seems to be good at. So,
but just strong state laws that you can use. use, and people often overlook the state laws, but our state anti-discrimination statutes are even stronger than federal requirements. And
but again, you have to get somebody's attention to go for that. I mean,
you
have
to
file,
for instance, an MCAD complaint, and that doesn't cost you anything. And it's going to be a lot easier in many cases for a company to fix their website rather than paying a lawyer, you know, $10,000 to start responding, you know, and filing all these.
But if you just fire, if one person just files a complaint, is that going to make them change? Is that going to do anything?
Mika, now what about the case, Mika? Was it JetBlue or which one was it that the judge recently ruled that they didn't, was one of the airlines?
That they
didn't have to make their site accessible.
It was JetBlue and United, but airlines are kind of a special category. They are more largely governed by the DOT, and the DOT does have an NPRM out about accessible websites and kiosks, and the Secretary LaHood is actually going to speak at the NFB convention, and there's some possibility that, you know, since he agreed to speak, I'm just kind of curious if he's going to announce that that NPRM has been promoted. It's certainly something to watch. Airlines are kind of their own animal. If something happened with an airline, it doesn't mean that that's the way it's going to be for other types of entities.
Even if you say in the law that the law says something has to be accessible, it seems to me that that's such a vague. We know what we mean by accessibility, but I'm not so sure that it's been codified in such a way that you can enforce it and say, you know, here are the specific steps that you have to take to make things accessible. And when you get down to the programming level, that's what it always boils down to when you're done, is you say, okay, you want this accessible, tell me exactly what you mean by that, and tell me what things I have to do.
Well, that's why the guidelines are so nice, but the problem is, what guidelines do we test to? I would say W3C in every circumstance, but the government's not going to say that. They're going to say 508. 508 guidelines are way out of date. You know, they're really not going to help much. They don't even say that you need to use headings. They don't even.
Yeah. One thing that means to flip all the time, like the kind of flippant comment I make, is that accessibility is a moving target. We always talking so far about the developer side of things, but what about like the end user side? Say, sitting in my house on my MacBook Air using Safari and VoiceOver, and Jerry's sitting home using like Windows 98 with Lynx. We're not in the same experience. Which one's accessible? Which one's not? And when does, you know, where does that actually lead to? You know, which audience do you play to in that case?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard question. I would probably say that people using modern browsers, you know, basically an updated version of Firefox, which is free, or, you know, a later version of IE, which generally comes with Windows machines, or a later version of Safari, those are the people that you want to target, because really, HTML5 and these modern browsers and the modern screen readers do a lot better with accessibility, especially with today's web. If you're talking about a website that was built 10 years ago, it might not matter too much, but with modern websites, you're going to need a modern browser and a modern screen reader, and it really does make a difference.
I totally agree. I mean, I'm sure, Jerry, you could test that often. You hear about people, well, this is not accessible to me, and then you know, situations out there.
But the problem is, you know, people might not have the money or the update JAWS.
What's accessible to one person is not, you know, that
they might not have.
It's a moving target.
That's why it's too bad in a way, and I know they've had these some test sites to try, but I don't think they've ever been very successful. So that you could run your website through some testing thing, and they're terrible. They don't work. But it's too bad in a way, because so much of what I'm a beta tester for a couple of things, and one of the things that I've seen as recently as this week is somebody complained that something wasn't accessible. And it wasn't that it was not accessible, it's that they didn't know how to use their screen reader well enough to actually use the tools that were available to them.
I strongly feel that backward compatibility should not be even mentioned to developers, because that's unrealistic to expect that they're going to produce stuff that we can use with 10-year-old technology.
They don't do that for sighted people, right? I mean, mostly they say if you're going to use this site successfully, you need to use a modern browser and a modern machine. And that's unfortunate, but, you know, sighted people don't have to do anything to update their technology. Screen reader users have to pay thousands of dollars to update their screen reader oftentimes. But really, if you need a decent screen reader that's free, NVDA is pretty good. It's not perfect, and it's it's kind of frustrating and the speech is not great out of the box, but, you know, it's free and it really does work, especially with the web. It's really aimed at websites and actually sort of implementing the specification as closely as possible. They do a good job, you know, or if you're on a Mac, you get it for free if you have a recent version of the OS. So, you know, on the iPhone, obviously, it's built in. So,
do you think that NVDA is better than System Access?
I've never actually used it, but when I looked at some survey results, like within the past year, it's System Access was really not even a contender. It's a great idea, but it just doesn't follow the spec well enough and hasn't implemented a lot of it. You know, I don't know. Probably NVDA is a lot better. And if you look at the way NVDA has evolved, I mean, it was actually started by and is still mostly written by two blind folks in Australia, and obviously they have the same goals as most of us. That's why it's actually become so successful in like 3 years.
Are there any better voices for it than the default?
You can actually get there's some patch that I've actually downloaded that actually does make it work with Eloquence, but of course you have to have JAWS for that. But even if you have an older version of JAWS, it still will work. Again, because Eloquence is not open source and blah, 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 they don't really support it. Unless you have JAWS or some other screen reader already installed that has Eloquence, it's not like you can go and buy Eloquence. I mean, it's not that I know of. It's just highly unfortunate. You could use Sappy. There's voices, but then there are voice variants, and you can actually find one that's not so bad. It's not so harsh. You know, you just got to try them. Yes, you can use Sappy voices, which are essentially those things that you can get with like Kurzweil and stuff which are fine and they sound a lot more human. But the problem for me is that the inflection is so bad and can just throw you. Like, I can't read a novel or any kind of long text with one of those because the inflection is just so off that it just makes me crazy. But there is another feature of NVDA which I haven't tried. That's actually, there's an inflection setting. You can theoretically flatten all that stuff out so it's completely monotone or very close to it, and that may actually help. I don't know.
I'm curious to know if there's anyone in this room who uses NVDA as their primary, and if the answer is no, you've got to wonder why.
Right.
I will, once I get my Windows CD and put it onto the Mac, then I will use NVDA.
I just can't tolerate those voices. But I think, you know, and I think, again, it depends upon what you want to do. And that's the thing. I mean, if people ask me a lot, what screen reader should I get? I say, well, it depends on what you want to do. I mean, some things, NVDA works perfectly well and can actually yield better results than some of the more expensive screen readers, you know, on some pages or in some circumstances. But I think if you have to do any kind of complex, you know, work-related stuff, then you're more likely to have something like JAWS.
If I believed for a second that NVDA could work well on the range of programs that JAWS works well on, I'd start learning it and try to use it. Yep. But that hasn't been my experience when I'm fooled around with it a little bit.
Me and Jeff were talking in the ride about this, and then came up with examples. One thing I was doing for work that I had to get through one piece of software that was installed on the computer, and I actually had to use JAWS, System Access, NVDA, and ZoomText. Read me everything I need to read. Each one did little pieces of it.
I can believe it.
I just wanted to ask a question. I'm a low vision user, and I use, like, in Windows, one of the high contrast schemes, which has a black background, and then some of the text on a web page will disappear then. And I don't know, you know, if anybody knows what controls whether that, because some of the text it'll follow the color scheme that you're using in the computer, but other stuff apparently doesn't. And it, you know, if it's set to be black on white, white's gone away, it disappears.
I think there's settings in Firefox and in IE that you can use to turn off all the page styles. I mean, it's basically the style sheets that are controlling the colors and such. Not always, but that's pretty much the way it's done now. I know in options in Firefox and in IE, it might be even under accessibility or something like that. It says, you know, turn off all page styles.
Right.
It also can mess up your layout. So if you're used to seeing the page in a certain way, you may get surprised. It may just come out like one big long column of stuff, which may not be helpful for you. I don't know. I don't have any vision, so that may do what you want, but it may not. You can also mess with the font settings in the options for your browser, and that may help. But a lot of that comes down to the fact that the developers have used bad choices for foreground and background colors, and I get this from, I mean, sighted people. This is one of the things that we check for in accessibility and usability is that, you know, maybe if you're 20 years old, you can see these things really clearly, but if you're our age, then your sight tends to degrade even if you can see perfectly, and you can't see tiny little fonts, and you can't see colors that are very close together, foreground and background, and they do that all the time.
I have a question about Java. How important is it to keep it up to date?
Do you use it? I mean, I don't use it at all. I've never, for what I've been told and from what I've seen, it doesn't work at all in a browser. And the only things that you can use Java for are standalone applications that are written. But then, of course, you have to have Java Access Bridge and all this kind of stuff installed, and you have to install that manually. And if you don't use it, uninstall it, because there are actually some security risks with it, too. So I would actually get rid of it.
There's no reason required for modern websites to operate properly.
That's JavaScript. It's a completely different animal, and it lives in the browser. It has nothing to do with Java at all.
Yeah, because I've had sites say you must have JavaScript enabled.
But yeah, that's different. That's completely different. Well, JavaScript is part of the web browser. It's like one of the three technologies that the web is based on, and it's part of the browser. It's not a separate entity.
But if you're setting up a computer or a browser for accessibility, right, are there certain configuration settings that you use yourself that you recommend to people?
In Firefox, there is some stuff under the advanced thing that I would turn off. There's something about checking your spelling while you type. Turn that off. Often I'll turn off images just because it's faster. They've done a lot of work with caching and such, so that image loading is a lot faster nowadays, so you really don't notice a whole lot of difference when you turn it off.
How about in IE? Because most people, I think, here probably use IE.
In IE, I mean, there's still this thing about move system caret with focus and things like that I would enable. It's one of the first ones in the list and under the advanced options, or something about use alt for image images or something like that. Make sure that's checked.
Expand alt tags for images.
Yeah, make sure that's always checked. Yeah. And I don't think it is by default.
No, it's not.
That's pretty much really it.
Do you use the latest version of IE?
I have, yeah.
Have you run into any problems? I did on a particular site, and it works fine. I forget, is the latest version 8?
9.
No, it's 9.
So in 8, it worked perfectly, and in 9, it didn't render certain descriptions on the page. I was wondering if you ran into any problems.
Yep. Well, I don't use IE often enough. I mostly use Firefox nowadays, but when I've actually had to use it and test with it, it seems pretty stable and pretty standards compliant to me.
Well, Rich, I want to thank you very much.